Go to work. Not that you weren't working, of course, but...
Oh my God.
Let's move now to item 8.03. Our final business item of the evening was asked by Ms. Stevens to be moved to the discussion agenda. Pursuant to House Bill 17-1375, school districts must adopt a plan to either distribute at least 95% of the mill levy override revenue to each charter school in proportion to their current funded pupil count, or develop an alternative plan for distribution. The Board of Education was informed of the new requirement and staff recommendations for sharing a plan as part of the budget presentation at the March 1 board meeting. Additional detail was communicated to the board on April 20th. Our district currently shares mill levy override revenues with the charter schools at 100% based on their funded pupil count. The proposed plan, beginning in fiscal year 2019-20, will continue with 100% share, but 5% of this amount will be allocated by the number of free and reduced lunch counts at each charter school. JEFCO authorized schools operating under the Charter School Institute do not fall under this agreement, but will be covered under separate agreements regarding mill levy sharing. Because the district has always shared mill levy override revenue with the charter schools, there will be no financial impact to the district. Individual charter schools will be impacted favorably or not favorably by the shift of the 5%, depending on the number of students at each school who are eligible to receive free and reduced lunch. Charter school principals were informed of the requirement for a plan on March 6th and of the proposed plan through email on April 17. The proposed plan was presented again to charter school principals on May 1. The district will include this mill levy override sharing plan in the charter operating contracts and amendments. Is there a motion on this agenda item?
Mr. Mitchell, I move that the Board of Education adopts the resolution as authorized by the state to approve the charter school mill levy override revenue sharing plan for 2019-2020 as required by House Bill 17-1375, and to continue to share with charters at 100% based on funded pupil count, with distribution of 95% per pupil and the remaining 5% to the students identified by the state as eligible to receive free or reduced lunch in each share.
Is there a second?
A second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we adopt this resolution. We would like to begin discussion on this item, and I would like Ms. Stevens to begin our discussion.
Well, let me start by saying thank you very much to our cabinet and leadership. I think you all came up with a strong recommendation. I believe that the right thing to do is to make sure that equity is part of our funding approaches and policy for our district. I also recognize that we have students who qualify for free and reduced lunch in all of our schools, not just our charter schools. And so my counterproposal would be to take this recommendation and say, yes, in fact, let's utilize 5% of mill levy override dollars, but let's distribute that 5% to all students in all schools, not merely charter pass-through to charter students. I believe that the spirit and intent of 1375 was to really recognize that school sector can matter less and student needs can matter more. I think we have ends goals that articulate what we intend to achieve for every student, but we are not alone in continuing to recognize that there are opportunity and achievement gaps. which demonstrates a continued need to further support our students who qualify for free and reduced lunch. I want to point out that in HB 1232, the Superintendent's Modernized School Finance Act, there's a recognition that in order to really create adequate, equitable funding, a student who qualifies for free and reduced lunch would actually be funded at a 0.3 factor, or kind of 130% rather than just 100% of the base. And I think there's a recognition that while we attempt through SBB to recognize an adjustment for free and reduced lunch, it doesn't begin to come close to that level of equity and adequacy. I also believe that we continue to have certain modes within SBB that permit flexibility, things like kindergarten. Additionally, school communities may be able to fundraise differently based on the makeup of their students and families. Therefore, I really believe it is warranted to embrace this recommendation, but apply it to 5% of all mill levy override dollars, and to apply it to all students receiving a portion of a proportional amount of that 5% if they qualify for free and reduced lunch. In addition to the strategic aims that our district does to support these students in schools, I think there is a need for further realized flexibility. We've seen it, for example, Pomona High School, where the PAW program comes in competition. We've seen it at Wheat Ridge High School, where GT versus reading intervention or math interventions for students who are not achieving at grade level. I think it warrants meeting our ends, or at least further resourcing our attempt to meet our ends for every student, which in my mind suggests that this is the right approach, but the wrong scope or scale. And it should be all mill levy override dollars, take 5% and distribute that to all free and reduced lunch qualifying students, whatever school.
Other comments?
Ms. Askelson, I was actually trying to find the table in here that talks about our base under SBB, our base, and then the additions that we make for the FRL students. And as a percentage, is that higher than the 5%, than 5%? Or I think if I understood your comment, FRL students are funded at 130% of.
They would be if, for example, we had a modernized school finance that recognized what we've heard from superintendents regarding adequately and equitably funding
right.
those students. Right now, I think the adjustment for free and reduced lunch students within SBB is $650. The base is between $4,500 and $5,300 based on the school level, so it's not nearly that kind of 130% additional dollars. What I also want to recognize is that when it comes to state dollars, they flow through to our district based on their formula, right? Those dollars, that complete formula pass-through, is sent to our charter schools. So, for example, any dollars that Jeffco gets attached to our identified free lunch students, as I understand it right now, is automatically passed through to every charter school student, whether or not they qualify for free and reduced lunch. So because there's not a requirement that a school district take those dollars and push through the at-risk factors or category to the school, therefore charter schools receive the full per pupil amount with all of those adjustments already made. Again, to my point, it's not the wrong approach, it's the right approach. I just think it's the wrong scope and scale, and that the equity we're hoping to achieve for free and reduced lunch students in our charter schools is also warranted for the free and reduced lunch students in all of our schools. So I would recommend that we take this approach and apply it to 5% of all mill levy override dollars. I've done very rough math based on CDE numbers, but I'd certainly be welcome, open to any input regarding what the impacts of that are. And basically, if we did that, it would redistribute about $5.5 million of mill levy override to the tune of about $210 per free and reduced lunch qualifying pupil. If we simply pass through all the dollars and ask require charter schools to take the 5% and redistribute that only to those students who are FRL, then they'll be receiving more than that, because it's not reaching all of our FRL kids. It would just be reaching some of them.
I have to say.
Do you have input on, because those were really rough numbers. Just jumped on CD.
And those numbers are close. I think
right.
we were just running the calcs at about 5% of the district share is $5 million. And in order to show compliance with that, we would be pulling it from the base and adding it to the, so you would have definitely some schools that lose funding and other schools that would gain based on their free and reduced counts.
Right. And I suppose maybe that principle of we can't do everything. My preference would be that ballot initiative 93 passes and we're realizing more dollars and that those dollars are distributed by the state with more better adequacy and equity. But until that time, even though we can't take a big step, we can take an incremental step toward equity.
I would suggest that in our previous budget discussion, we took incremental steps towards equity. And I would suggest that taking money from one school under our current budget proposal and allocating it to another school for the coming budget year is...
Well, it wouldn't be for the coming.
Right, I'd like to finish. Is, in my judgment, not a wise decision. And so you can tell very clearly where I stand on this.
For what it's worth, this would not impact the 2018-19 budget. It would only come into play in the 2019-20. We have to make our plan by July 1st, but it's not an impact until the following school year budget.
So just to go back to clarify what Amanda was saying, we were originally taking and distributing mill levy at 100% per FTE into the district bucket and then into the charter bucket.
Right.
And then within those buckets, the charter bucket would then be distributed 95% and then 5% for free and reduced. If we take away and eliminate the very first step and we take our entire district population and distribute it 95% FTE and then 5% free and reduced, what that does is it shifts $239,000 back to the district as a financial benefit. So it would take it away from the charter bucket.
Which is not a significant amount for the charter schools to lose.
And what that would do is that would create additional funding at $210 per FTE in total, whereas if you do it the other way, there is an inequity on free and reduced. It would be $200 for free and reduced kids in the district and then $361 at a charter school, just because there's a larger portion of free and reduced children within the district population. And I think that's where you're going, but it only creates an additional $239,000 overall for the district.
And only removes about $239,000 from the charter dollars, but again, based on policy, adequacy and equity, and incremental steps toward that, knowing that we really do want to realize new dollars to do that better and a better formula. But in the meantime, I think this is a moderate impact, really quite small impact to the fully realized dollars that charters would see, but creates greater equity. Again, treating students across all school sectors with a sense of equity based on their individual student needs.
So I want to say a few things. First of all, I appreciate your never-ending passion for equity and adequacy, and I'm with you. I really am. There are a few things to consider. First of all, there are districts that are for the first time navigating this territory. So they get to have the opportunity to collaborate with their charters for the very first time to probably do something like this. And from the get-go, we don't have that opportunity because we already have equalized funding, and I would be against taking money from. And that is the reason why I would not be in favor of this proposal, but I honestly understand where you're coming from, where you're going, and I just, for me, that doesn't work for me. And another thing, and even with the proposal as is, which is what I support, I have questions because I want to make sure, and I have already talked to Tim, but I wanted on public record that this was a collaboration with our charter leaders and that they were feeling, they were positive about this. You did read in the proposal the dates of the communication, and I appreciate that. But could you please tell me more if Tim or somebody who else might have been part of that communication that the charters were feeling favorable about the proposal we are talking about right now in black and white?
I don't know if they did not respond with any feedback one way or the other. So on both of the emails that we sent, as well as the two presentations that Dr. Corbo made to the charter schools, we literally received zero feedback. Just this week, we were very intentional about saying, let us know if you have any questions, let us know if you have any concerns. We really need to hear from you about this before the board meeting so that we can answer your question. And there literally were, there were no concerns in the meeting expressed.
Okay.
I do want to just point out that when it comes to budget decisions, we already make trade-offs. We already recognize that there are some schools that are going to receive additional dollars because of their size factor adjustment, or who are going to lose additional dollars because they're a larger school. We also recognize that kindergarten becomes a revenue stream that varies based on a school community's number of paying families. My belief is we need to be guided by honoring that which evidence and our experts communicate, which is that we must grow the dollars we invest in our schools. But in the meantime, we still should be serving adequacy and equity. And I believe we better serve equity and create flexibility for those students who most depend upon our schools to be a great equalizer in their life. And again, we have end statements that our board has rallied behind to say, this is what we intend to do for every student. I believe we can do that, and we can do that better. And one of the things that will help us do that better for every student is to close opportunity and achievement gaps by delivering some more, not a lot, not enough, but some more flexible dollars based on the number of students who are navigating the challenges of poverty.
Thank you. And let me just finish my comments, and then I'd love to hear what you guys think. And so for the existing proposal here, resolution, I have a few charters that I oversee that they do their own lunch. They make their own lunches. So they have zero FRL, but they really don't. And so I think it's really important with this resolution, that we help them figure out a way to get on record, because they do have a lot of FRL. I'm thinking of two in particular that serve their own lunches. And so they would get nothing from this resolution as is, but they have higher FRLs. And I would really like us to make an effort somehow to guide them through the process of getting their parents to fill out paperwork.
Right. And we understand that. And that's what's nice about this communication of this plan a year before it goes into effect. Because okay. There's lots of notice for the schools to start collecting those family data surveys and getting that information in place.
Okay.
We did have that very conversation on Tuesday. So they do have the opportunity to do the economic data family survey. What some of the charter schools do is when parents ask for some relief on some of the fees, they don't require them to turn that in. They just help them and they waive fees. And so it's just been a practice that they've had in charter schools a lot of times, where they don't go through the process. They say, yes, if you're asking, we'll do this. And so the conversation was about how to try and get accurate numbers. And it's actually really important to get accurate numbers from charter schools, because it impacts data as well. And so the conversation was about really changing the culture and saying, yes, you're going to have to potentially do this and have those parents submit those forms so that we get accurate numbers. With the real intent to really get a reflection of how many students they have there. It is more difficult if you don't have free and reduced lunch.
Okay. So then I will end my comments with, I am in favor of 8.03 suggested as it's written, because I believe the communication has been done, and it makes me feel good that you are going to attempt to help them make sure that the FRL papers are filled out. Done. 10 o'clock, huh? Okay, I turn into a punk.
Any other comments?
Did you want to say? Go ahead.
Yeah, I guess my comment is Amanda, I think that what you've suggested is a principled approach, and I think it probably represents step two, and this motion is step one. The reason I think it's a two-step approach is for exactly the reason Nellie just raised, and that is that I think a number of our charter schools don't engage in the FRL process. It's not a priority for them. And so those numbers aren't really the accurate proxy for poverty that we really hold them out to be. And so if we let this step one happen, it gives them an incentive to start engaging in that process a little more accurately. And when we reconsider our plan next year for the following term, I suppose, it would make sense for us to consider the financial impact at that point. Right now, it's minimal, but I have no idea whether it's going to turn out to be minimal or not when the charter community consistently engages in the FRL applications.
So I too support what number we're on, 8.03, and I'm excited to hear as it rolls out over time what I'm hoping to be positive steps and outcomes, and I support the concept and the application, and I appreciate you guys putting this all together. I also appreciate what you're saying, Amanda, and went back to the last meeting when I heard your concept on this, and obviously you wanted more, which I get. I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around all the other cliff effects and things that we've already done in our SBB 0.2 and all these other things that we are really continuing to try to manage this each year with our adjustments, and we are getting better. We are not there. And I applaud your creativity and your calculations to have another idea that might work. I'm just not ready to move there yet in the sense of, I honestly, we had this other discussion about this other $2.3 million and all these other things that we're doing. I'd like to follow through on some of the things that we are doing, implement this, and watch this process and get feedback on that. But again, thank you for your championing the cause and your number crunching. I value that.
Dr. Glass.
Thank you. I think that it's important to note that in the district's funding model for our district-managed schools, there are equity factors built in, $650 per FRL-eligible student. That's part of the district's SBB process. We have Title I funds that, of course, go to equity. That's an equity funding stream. We discussed the $2.3 million tonight that will end up in some form addressing this issue as well. So I think we have some elements that are addressing the equity aspects of the conversation. We're taking another step on that with the budget for next year. What we're talking about with this provision, it's just a simple solution to a complex legislatively created problem that said you had to pass through 95% to charter schools. This proposal does that, and it layers in an equity factor on top of that. So it's just a very simple and elegant solution to a complicated policy problem. I don't think it takes off the table what we should be doing in terms of having equity in our minds as we consider funding configurations for SBB and the district-managed schools going forward. I think both of you raised that point. And so I think as we come back around to funding from this point forward, considering the district schools, that absolutely should be part of the conversation. But our recommendation is to approve this resolution tonight.
Other comments? Hearing none, I'll repeat the motion before our vote. It's been moved and seconded to adopt the resolution as authorized by the state to approve the charter school mill levy override revenue sharing plan for 2019-2020 as required by House Bill 17-1375 and to continue to share with charters at 100% base on funded per pupil count with distribution of 95% per pupil and the remaining 5% to students identified by the state as eligible to receive free and reduced lunch in each share. Roll call, please.
Ms. Harmon?
Yes.
Ms. LaSalle?
Yes.
Mr. Mitchell?
Yes.
Mr. Rupert?
Yes.
Ms. Stevens?
No.
Okay. We move now to public comment part two. I think we've reviewed the guidelines for public comment. We expect respectful comments in the boardroom. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and get us started. And I think I already have Kathy Pritchard at the microphone. We have four speakers. We'll allocate 3 minutes per each. Welcome, Ms. Pritchard.
Thank you very much. And I would just ask if I have timed my comments, and they are closer to 4 minutes. So since I've been here for 4.5 hours, I was wondering if you guys could give me one more minute, please. Thank you. Is that okay?
It's up to the president's discretion.
What I would say is speak fast. And at some point, we have to be fair to our to you and to our guidelines.
Sure.
That's a balancing act. Please go as fast as you can.
Okay. I do have copies of my comments that I gave to the young lady over there, so you will have those tomorrow. Our experience, and I mean my husband's and mine, having had children in Jeffco schools for the past 11 years, is that the district, in some instances, has exceeded its authority in making decisions for our kids. A culture exists in this district in which personnel, including board members, administrators, and teachers, believe they should be parenting our children. In many cases, this stems from a true desire to serve our kids, especially those who may not have actively interested parents. However, I think this desire has bred a false sense of authority in decision-making. Some examples we've encountered are our elementary school inviting a deputy to discuss the legal ramifications of sexting to fifth and sixth graders without our knowledge. High school science teachers, not healthcare professionals, providing detailed information on how to use various methods of contraception. Teachers inviting their students to talk to them about problems they have at home, and excusing our kids from class without our approval. Another aspect of the culture that has developed in the last several years is that district personnel feel obligated to support what students deem to be their rights. We have taught our kids that their rights extend to those we give them, i.e. what we deem necessary for their safety and moral upbringing. This parental authority is completely supported by the laws of the state. When our kids are in school, this district becomes an extension of our parental authority and not a replacement of it. In the case of the Florida shootings, we discussed with our son topics such as mental health, bullying, behavior awareness, gun laws, school safety, reporting methods, communication, and actions we could take to prevent tragedies like this from happening again. If we had been part of the discussion leading up to the March 14th demonstration activities, our input would have been, one, clearly identify your concerns. Two, identify all aspects, topics, issues that may affect these concerns. Three, come up with possible solutions. Four, enlist the help, advice, and if necessary, the approval from people in authority. Five, discuss effective ways to voice your opinions or take action to make changes. Six, consider the consequences of your actions. If the decision-making process had resulted in something closer to this, we would have encouraged and approved our son's participation. When something of this importance comes along, we want the district's first inclination to be to communicate with the parents. In this case, the district had discussions with the students, teachers, administrators, and the media. The parents were merely informed and given less than 2 days to react to these decisions. I believe the school district overstepped its bounds. This was also the case that occurred a couple years ago leading up to the school board election, where schools permitted students to walk out for the purposes of political protest without their parents' authorization. We wholeheartedly support the school's efforts to give students the opportunity to try out new things and address challenging situations that come up outside the classroom. What we do not support is a decision-making process that leaves parents out. Every parent must have the deciding vote when it comes to their child's participation in these activities. We encourage our kids by word and action to voice their questions and concerns, A, in a manner that is consistent with our values, B, with the knowledge that their words and actions have consequences, good or bad, and C, within the structure and authority of those with whom they may be dealing. My proposal to the board is that we create a parent's guide that may need to be governed by a new district policy that clearly defines parental authority and responsibilities while our kids are under the care of the district. And in my comments, I have provided suggestions for what might go in that, and I think this document could go a long way to foster communication between the school district and the parents and avoid future conflicts and misunderstandings. We are also working with Colorado legislators to modify the revised statutes to better define the scope of in loco parentis. Thank you.
And I just want to say, too, that I have more understanding than I really wanted to have of what your job entails, and I thank you for your service.
Thank you, Ms. Richard.
Can I ask one more question? Where do I go from here as far as pursuing this parent guide or handbook?
The board does not respond to public comment, but the staff can visit with you after the meeting tonight, or we can exchange emails further and follow up.
Okay, thanks.
Our next speaker is Eric Colmar. Is Eric in the room? We'll come back to that. Mr. Fernault.
Thank you. I would like to address the anti-teacher strike bill, SB 264, which failed in the state Senate. Perhaps I will shock some people here, but I would strongly support this bill as long as about five amendments or clarifications are made, and I call these the MRSS amendments. That's MRRSS, MRRSS, maintenance, retirement, respect, supplies, and salaries. Maintenance. Let's adequately fund for the maintenance of our schools. I suspect that Mr. Bell could give us some great ideas for needed maintenance projects, which ought to be funded in our district alone. Retirement. Our para must be kept as a defined benefit plan, providing for the retirement of our teachers, police officers, firefighters, and other public employees. Defined benefit retirement plans for employees must remain or become a standard requirement for all employers, public and private, and adequate funding must be ensured. Respect. This one's not monetary. Teachers will never be venerated in our society, but at least we can stop the demonization of teachers, which has been going on well nigh for 30 years by both the right wing and the left wing. You know, the moment that I knew teachers would always be demonized was when I looked at the first CSAP test and realized that all the practice examples were just there to fool you. The test had nothing to do with what they claimed it would be about. They were there to make the kids fail. And things have just gone down since then. We had Senate Bill 191, sponsored, and I hate to say it, by a D4 Democrat, the ultimate teacher-bashing bill in our state. It's high time we stop this monstrosity and its sponsors. Supplies. I always thought it was just standard operating procedure that employees bought supplies needed for the job. I didn't realize that we as teachers do that more than other people. I mean, for example, when they started to get stingy about Xeroxing, I started going to Kinko's. For about the last 6 years of my career, I paid $4,000 plus per year out of my pocket on Xeroxing worksheets, tests, and so on, plus maybe several hundred dollars per year on paper of color because I didn't just like white paper. I never thought anything about it, but maybe I should have. And salaries, let's maintain adequate salaries for our school employees, as was discussed earlier tonight. So with the MRSS amendments, that's MRRSS, maintenance, retirement, respect, supplies, and salaries, I will strongly support the prohibition on teacher strikes in SB 264 because there won't be a need for those strikes. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fernald. Our final speaker this evening is Emily Edelman. Emily here? Yes, she is.
My name is Emily Edelman, and I am from Lakewood, but I live in Lakewood, Colorado, right behind Bear Creek, K through 8. This is my first time ever actually being in here, so I apologize if I don't know the etiquette. I am very passionate about culture and have seen a lot of things very interestingly represented tonight. And some of the things that you all have discussed in the budget, some of the ideas that you've presented actually kind of overlap. So I'm hoping maybe some of my ideas and perspective can come alongside with some of the things that you said. So I refer to your Indians as my minions. I believe that there's a lot of resources that we're missing out on within our schools. There's been a lot of discussion and representation for various people groups that I associate as my kids. So if I refer to my kids, I've not given birth to anyone. However, every child I've ever met, I've pretty much adopted. Not legally or kidnapped in real life, but I'll just continue to claim them as my own. In the future, I hope to be involved continually in JeffCo. I believe a lot in its message. I found myself walking into Alameda High School junior, senior high last year. I didn't really know what that entailed. Previous to that, I just kind of associated it as the football field with all the goose poop. Other than that, I didn't really have any interactions from the community perspective other than driving past it to commute different places. One thing that I've noticed from being involved in the school, and 3 minutes is really, really short, sorry guys, is that there's not a lot of Spanish representation for my kids in admin and other people. So as you guys are assessing kind of how to come alongside and help out these teachers, I would really love it. Substitutes as well, could be a whole nother discussion, but to allow there to be support staff that maybe don't add up on paper, to maybe allow in various people that their character speaks for themselves, for what their worth is, rather than maybe degrees or passing certain expectations that have normally been allowed. Due to the fact that in the cultures that I'm speaking of, family will always be prioritized over going and getting a four-year degree because it's just too much of a risk. The risk in babysitting cost, going and getting a job, because there's more than enough people out in this world right now that have four-year degrees but no jobs pertaining to what they got their degree in. And so for my Latino people, groups that I work with, my heritage speakers, the moms and dads just can't risk that. But they are definitely valuable in experience in life. Their value can't be added up on a Scantron. Some of the ideas that I've gotten have been from various people and poets and musicians and things like that. And I brought you guys a copy of this. This is a gentleman that I had the privilege of meeting, and he has something, to not be offensive, but it's called Dear Board of Education, but it's spelled B-O-R-E-D, and it's not meant to be offensive, but just kind of the idea of returning to a simplistic sort of education of quality over statistics. And it's really sad, and I love how all your brains work, and that huge book that lady had was impressive, very impressive. After my first year of teaching, that's super impressive, but yeah, I would love to further that conversation, but that's definitely past 3 minutes, so I don't know if I'm allowed to approach the bench, but I'll just hand it to the lawyer.
There you go. That is proper. Thank you, Ms. Edelman.
Thank you, sir.
We'll move now to the last item on our agenda, which is developing our next agenda. And I would ask Ms. Neal to please join us for the board's discussion of our upcoming meetings.
Okay, your next meeting is Monday and the agenda is posted, so I probably won't review that unless you would like me to do so. You have most of the month of May's graduations, and I think you'll be getting your information on those in the next week or two. Your next regular meeting is June 7th. And at this point, you are going to have a study session on the appointments to your advisory committees. You'll be getting some information on the applicants that we received through April. And there are four committees that you'll be appointing members to. That is also the meeting where we do our new art display. So all the art awards will come on June 7th. It is also the adoption of the budget. That is the big item for the evening. You will have a stock take on the conditions tactic commitment to equity, and then a discussion on planning for arts in Jeffco, and the MAP spring data. And that would be your last business meeting of the school year. And then we move to the Monday study session on June 11th. You could begin again at 8:30 with the executive session on the quarterly check-in on the superintendent's evaluation. Then at 9 o'clock, you could start with the stock take readiness tactic, schools as community hubs, and another stock take following that, the family and community engagement readiness tactic. Then you'll have a presentation on Jeffco climate and culture, which is all of our surveys coming together to give you that perspective. A presentation on the fiber optic project from Brett Miller, and community survey information. So that's your study session in June. I'm also collecting information on dates when you're available. The city of Arvada would like to meet with you the last week of June, and I've heard from the majority of you. You're pretty flexible that week on the dates that were requested, so I'll be in communication with Arvada and see if that we can work that out. And that's looking ahead to the end of the school year.
Okay. Any questions, concerns, colleagues?
What's the planning for arts and Jeffco discussion? What is that?
It's a review of the work that Matt Flores and I did with the art, music, and theater teachers this spring around developing a strategic plan for art, music, and theater education. So some aspects of it are in the district's budget proposals that we talked about earlier, the theater coordinator. Okay. But this is a more in-depth sort of multi-year look that we worked on with them around where to support art, music, and theater education at a more significant level. What would that look like? So you'll get a report on that. And we'll have some members that did that work with us come and talk to you, too.
I will surface something that I don't think we need to add to any of the May or June meetings, but should be on our radar. Every October, we have a conversation about the CASB resolutions that are proposed for the consideration at the Delegate Assembly. I just wanted to let everyone know that every year CASB begins from scratch with that. We look at the standing resolutions and we look at any new proposed resolutions. So what that means is districts and boards can forward any legislative priorities or resolutions they'd like to propose that they believe other school boards across the state may want to work together and say this is part of our shared CASB legislative priority set of priorities. So that deadline comes in August 31st. So what that means is that for us as a board or a district, if there are any legislative priorities or resolutions that we want to forward and submit for consideration at the Delegate Assembly, we should probably have that conversation pretty quickly when we circle back at the beginning of next school year. So I just want that to be on our radar. If we think we want to do something prior to reading through the other boards and across the state's proposed resolutions for us to respond to, if we have anything that we think we'd like to submit.
You know, that makes me think about, I'm sure right when school starts, they begin for the CASB getting those student groups together to go down there. And every year when we're there, we're like, God, we wish we'd have a group of Jeffco kids there. So I'd like that to be on our radar as well. I don't know how that would, if we can kind of try to get that on some kind of calendar in August, that would be great. To have discussions, or you guys, not our
was
calendar,
that
but
the
your
spring day at the Capitol or something else?
Their convention has a student strand.
Yes.
End of November,
okay.
Beginning of December. So that's one opportunity. And yes, during CASB days at the Capitol by region, they also invite students to join us down there for that.
Anything else? Thank you, Ms. Neal. This meeting is adjourned at 10:38. Well done, Jeffco Board. Thank you.